If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, this is the 13th episode of the DesignFootball.com podcast. My name's Jay. I'm the resident blogger on DesignFootball.com. I've actually written some blogs recently, so read those. I usually am a blogger in name only, not in practice, but I have actually written some now. This week, I'm going to be speaking to John Devlin again. Consecutive weeks, John Devlin. Hi, John, how are you?
Hello, Jay. I'm good, thanks. And you? You well?
Yeah, I'm okay. I know it's just honour after honour for you coming on this podcast, but you're the first guest to come on 2 weeks running. That must be special.
Do I get some sort of certificate or something for that?
You're probably the best person to make that certificate. As a graphic designer, I'll leave that to you.
Thank you. I'll send you the bill.
Invoice me. What we were going to talk about today is kit books, and particularly your books, John. So we talk about you as being a kit geek and a football kit expert, but this is based around your having written the True Colours books. So How did these... Sorry, you're going to dispute that immediately.
No, I realised how that came across. No, that's fine.
So that's why I would listen... No, I would listen to everything you say because I know you know everything about kits, but there is basis for that as well in black and white and all the other colours you use in the kit books. So tell us a little bit about the kit books, how they came about, why you did them.
Goodness, well, it's a story that it goes way, way back to when I was about 7 or 8. I won't go through every detail since then, but there was a little book that came out at the time. There was a series of books called the Observer Book of whatever subject, little white books about A6 in size. I don't know if you've ever seen them. And there was one, the Observer Book of Football, and I hired it out at the library one day when I was a little lad, and in the middle there, a few colour plates, and it had simple graphics of all the shirt colours. And I just thought this was brilliant. And I was poring over these pages and, you know, I was really intrigued by the colours, the designs, everything else. And that really sparked something in me. And ever since then, I started drawing football kits. I never designed my own, but I just kept drawing them. So the years went on and, you know, as I grew older, I was drawing them with felt tips and sponsorship came out and pinstripes. And it was really hard to draw them with felt tips, as you can imagine, with all that detail. I carried on doing it. I carried on doing it into my 20s when I probably should have stopped. And eventually I ended up going back to college when I was 28 to study for a degree in graphic design. And as part of learning the software, Illustrator, which is a vector drawing software, I thought I'm going to dig out my old kit project again and just start drawing kits. And that way I can get to learn how the software works. From then on, I thought, hang on a minute, and all the kind of passion and love for the subject came back. I dug out all my old catalogues and magazines and cuttings that I'd kept over the years, over the decades, really, and made it a final part of my final degree project at college. So what I aimed to do was illustrate as many kits as I could from the kind of Premier League sides at the time and loads of others as well. So I did lots of work into it, and I kind of put it into historical context and talked about the designs and what sponsorship meant and identity, you know, really touched on the subjects that you have to do at degree level. And from then on, I thought to myself, right, there's a book in this. And every year, pre-season, I'd go out to the Waterstones or whatever and look for a copy of a kit book, and there was never one. And eventually it dawned on me, you know, one of those kind of like life-changing moments. And I thought, I've got to be the one to do it. And my dream that I'd had this, I've always wanted to see this book since I was a little boy, and I realised it was down to me to do it. It sounds a bit corny, but that is what happened. And that was it. I just sort of ploughed on and just did all I could to make it happen.
Yeah, it sounds very similar to the reasons why this podcast exists, because that's just what I was doing. I was looking for a podcast that talked regularly about football kits and didn't exist. And I thought, I'm probably the worst person to actually do something like this, but no one else has done it, so I'm going to have to do it. And here we are. I'm proving that point now.
It was funny though, Jay, because I used to, I had a few bit of work published in the West Ham programme. When I left college, I kind of wrote to a lot of clubs and said I was doing all these football kit drawings, would you like to use them? And got some work in the West Ham programme. And I remember going to Waterstones one day and there was a book on the shelf in the new book section called Club Colours. And I thought, oh no. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know if that was your reasoning, but Club Colours, I remember it, and I remember it being written by Bob Bickerton, but I think of it as being an approximation of what each team sort of wears each season. Mm. Now, with yours, it's like you've said that and said, actually, well, that's fine, but this one is the true colours. Was that the thinking for the title?
Just was.
To annoy him even more?
Well, no, it was... not to that, but... It was connected with that. I mean, I thought long and hard over the title, and I always thought it would be a good brand, if you like. And it came from showing your true colours, and the idea at the time that there's always criticism of teams not wearing the colours they should wear, and, you know, the identity of the clubs and stuff like that. And, of course, trying to make it an accurate representation of colours. So the name seemed to fit on many levels, which is always exciting as a designer. You always get excited when you realise that something works on lots of different levels, you know.
Yeah, so how did you develop the illustration style that you were going to use for the books?
Well, starting it off at college, learning the software, it was originally very scratchy. I really wanted it to look quite sketchy. So I had quite a, it was a little bit of a contrived look, if you like, and I had it quite rough and ready. And it was okay, and I actually did a couple of little mock-up books of single teams that I made at college. I did bookbinding at college as well, and I made a Man United one, and I actually bought a shirt off eBay and used the fabric to bind it like a cloth cover, you know. So it's quite, I was really pushing what we could do with this. But I came across a style of illustration in a catalogue, I think it was, and I really liked the simplicity of that and some of the styling they used. So I kind of took influence from that. I didn't rip it off, but I borrowed the way that they did things, adapted it, and went on from there. And then the style then became a lot neater. I put a black key line around the shirts as well, because that helped kind of keep everything in, if you know what I mean. It contained it all. Originally, the shorts and shirts were separate, and I didn't do socks. And then someone made a comment about doing socks as well. So, right, okay. And I wanted to be a cohesive illustration. So rather than having three separate elements, I wanted them to be as a whole. And that's where the idea came to kind of overlay them. And I think that came from an ad in a magazine. And they had the shorts overlaying the shirt in that style. And I thought, okay, that's a good way of doing that. It means you lose a little bit of the detail in the corners, but it became a distinctive style that hopefully was known to be mine, if you see where I'm coming from on that. So the illustration style definitely developed over a couple of years, really.
Yeah, what I like about it is it's neither flat nor filled. So last time we spoke, you talked about the way Nike present the new shirts, that it's like a balloon has been blown up inside them.
Yeah, yeah.
This invisible man thing. But that's... Yours is sort of halfway in between the two, is it? Sort of the shirt laid flat or filled, or was that, is that not what it was intended?
No, that is exactly what it was intended to be. It's funny, it's because it's only really since the I started doing more work on my website and illustrating for programs and other books that the textured kind of rolls of fabric, that idea came in. Originally in the book itself they were just flat colour, but that's exactly what it was. I described it as being a cross between the shirt being laid out flat on a table and the shirt being worn. If you lay as I'm sure you know, if you lay many shirts out flat on the floor and the table, they don't look aesthetically pleasing, and they don't look the same as when a player wears them, because, you know, just the cut of them, the sponsors can often look quite small, can't they, you know? And you realised a shirt needed to symbolically represent what the kit looked like, rather than being an exact measurement. You know, the Adidas logo is exactly that proportion of the width of the shirt and all that kind of stuff. So it really was exactly as you said, a cross between being worn and lying flat.
Yeah, I think there's a consistency across all your illustrations of sort of the cut of the shirt, and it is a compromise, isn't it? So there was a very tight shirt, then it's probably going to look baggier than that. If there's all the baggy 90s shirts, it's going to look tighter fitted than that. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that I wouldn't say I struggled with, but I agonised over. I made a decision once I'd got the publishing deal, or certainly once that ANC Black had shown an interest in publishing the book, I made a decision then that the shorts, everything was going to be the same size. So we couldn't get across the concept of the tight shorts of the 70s and 80s and the baggy shorts of the early 90s. And that was always a sadness for me in a way, but something had to give. It couldn't do everything. I mean, one guy who does is the guy behind Switch Image Project. I mean, his work I absolutely love. It just, you know, makes me salivate. It's that good. But I don't think I could have done that in the True Colours format, if you like.
Yeah, it's a guy called Asme. And yeah, some of the stuff is, I mean, it's incredible. It's comprehensive as well. There's so much
fantastic stuff
on there.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
He does some great stuff. But I think the way you do it, it's, and I would probably have a problem with that, because the cut of different kits and the evolution of different cuts over the last 30 years, let's say, is really important to me. So I'm really interested in that. But what you're doing is an illustration. It's a depiction of the idea of what the kit looks like. And like you say, it's true colours. So it's what colours the team is wearing that season, and the colours are the kit design, but maybe not the cut. And it's not necessarily a fashion thing to that extent. It's an illustration of what they're actually wearing. Does that make sense?
No, that's exactly right. It isn't it's deliberately not a photographic or a, it's not like the Football Manager graphics when they came out, the shirt graphics. It's not like that. It's definitely more of an iconic representation of what the shirt should look like. Quite sounds a bit pretentious, but I'm sure you know where I'm coming from. But it's, that's very much the idea behind it. I mean, I looked at loads of different layouts, loads of different ideas, especially when the publishers really got involved. And the layout, the piles of paper I've still got of different layouts and different formats, much looser than what the final one turned out. But we even had full figures at one point. So do I do a full figure illustration as well as the shirt? And there's a few of them on my website. There's a Man United series where I've tried to illustrate from Victorian times how the fit of the shirt and the shorts changed. Because I really like to get across that kind of fashion model representation of the cut as well, because that is important.
Yeah, the other thing is that the books aren't just picture books. There's so much research and writing about each shirt. So if there is a significant change in cut, then that's generally mentioned. In the little bit of blurb that goes with each design, which is great. I think your books are sort of on the desk of every kit geek and every, probably most kit football kit designers, I would have thought. You're probably aware of that as well, aren't you?
Yeah, I have heard over the years a lot of people have said that. And I know when Nike have often used them when they've been pitching to, you know, certainly for Manchester United at the time, that was a story I heard, that they'd go in and photocopy scanning my books and do them as mood boards and stuff like that, which is hard. It's just so flattering to hear that. That was such a buzz for me, you know.
Yeah, and it's great that they are used as a reference book like that, but I think there's value in reading both of the books as sort of like a novel from beginning to end, I think it's only probably kit geeks who are going to be able to manage to do that. But it's like if you read because there's so many parallels with each team,
yeah,
there'll be parallels, but there'll be little elements that are not quite the same. So it's a little bit like the last two Bourne films. So they run concurrently, but they're different stories. So you get to the end of the third one, and then you start the fourth one, and you're back to the beginning of the third one again. So it's a little bit like that. Read at each let's call them chapters of your books, and you can see where they correlate, but also where something really weird has happened, and a team has maybe waited a couple of seasons before using the template that another team had, or a high profile client had a template earlier than another team. So it is fascinating like that.
Well, I mean that's what I loved about how they turned out in the end, was that there's lots of different subtexts running through it. I mean, one of the ones I love to quote is the idea that, does a team play better when they look good? You know, if they get a spanking new kit, does it really make them, does it up their game when they change kit supplier? And quite often you'd see that. You'd see little things. I mean, again, going back to Manchester United, it's the obvious story. A decade with Adidas, won a couple of FA Cups or Cup Winners' Cup, changed to Umbro, first season, won the Premier League, first time for nearly 20 years, whatever. So it was really interesting seeing what difference the kit could make. But one thing, when I went into BBC London and had an interview with Danny Kelly at the time when the first book came out, and he said one thing he loved about them was that everything was treated the same. So a team, like a home kit that they won the championship in, was treated with the same reverence as a third kit that only made one appearance on a Wednesday night at Tranmere. And that was really fun for me as well. So that everything they wore was important, because it's what the team, the visual identity of the team. And I couldn't understand why no one had ever looked into this subject before I did. I couldn't, when you look at everything to do with a football club, every picture of a player, they're wearing a kit that represents the identity of a club. And why people wouldn't be interested in the development of that kit, I couldn't get my head around that. And I'm sure you know what I mean by that. It just seems illogical, yeah. Doesn't it?
Yeah, I think we're maybe the exceptions. Yeah, I think we're the exceptions rather than maybe all the people who don't have the same interest in it. But that's fine. More for them. When I go through them, so there's various ways you could read through these books to look for similarities. How did you select the teams for the first book then? Was True Colours, not True Colours 1, because... Did you know you were going to write the second one? Or
no, not at all. I mean, I tell you what happened was, I mean, I originally put together a little leaflet that I sort of printed out at home, and I got the artist and writer's yearbook and just wrote off to the first 10 publishers. I did it at starting from A, went off like that. And two of them came back. ANC Black said, look, we're really interested in doing it, but we'd need approval, copyright approval from every single club, every single sponsor and every single manufacturer before we'd even consider it. So I had to then take a punt that over 2 years, and it took me 2 years to do it, I had to contact every single intellectual property copyright owner and get written permission from them to include the logo in the book. Mm-hmm. So that's as well as researching, writing, finding as many kits as I could. And it pains me to this day when I see a third kit that I've missed that I didn't know about. And I still find out about them even now. But there was an immense amount of work that went into it. So eventually I could go to the publishers up in Soho and plonk down this folder and say, right, there's all the approvals. And they kind of decided what clubs to do. I had probably double that amount of clubs pretty much finished. And they said, we want to do just a Premier League for this season, which was, would it have been 2005, 2006, I think. So that was it. Yeah. They decided, because they're coming at it from a commercial point of view. They knew that was the, you know, they didn't really want to know what Leeds United or Southampton were wearing, because they weren't in the top flight then, even though I'd already illustrated them. But it was really funny, because that season I had all this work done, and I don't know if you probably won't remember, it was probably the first Premier League season where I think none of the teams relegated and promoted had been decided on the last day of the season. It went right to the wire, and I was sitting there with the radio on, listening, thinking, who's going to go up? Because it meant if Wigan went up, I had to do Wigan Athletic's kits in like a couple of weeks, whereas I had Crystal Palace's all done and I was hoping they were going to go up. And of course, the fates were against me, and I had to sort of do Wigan from scratch in 2 weeks, which was an absolute nightmare.
I bet you weren't disappointed. I bet you were over the moon.
No. Down. Oh no, I was pretty stressed by that point. I was at breaking point a little bit, Jay, I must be honest. It was immense pressure. Because I've got a 9-to-5 job as well, so it was a lot of hours going into it. But luckily, the guys over at the Old Oak and Crown, which is a Wigan site, they really, really helped me out, and I couldn't have done it without them. So it was fantastic. But it was, I was so cross when all the wrong clubs went up and all the wrong clubs went down. It meant lots of work, and lots of work wasted, if you know what I mean.
Well, it's Illustrated Football Kits could never be classed as wasted time.
You wouldn't have a word of my wife. But of course, what happened was the first book did quite well, and the publisher said, we want to do a volume two. And that was when we could mop up all of these teams that had just slipped from the limelight. Clubs like Leeds, Coventry, Southampton, who are all big teams that had been, you know, in and out of the Premier League. Southampton had been there for years. And we were able to then use that work and work with them.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many different points of interest. But one thing I thought of as a little test to yourself was to go through both books, if you've got both books, and try and find as many Brazil kits in there as you can. Now, I don't know if you've got an idea of how many there are, but so many teams over that period had, well, over the 1980 to, let's say, so for the blue books, what season did that go up to? Was that 2007 or something, was it? Or 2006?
Yeah, 2006, 2007. Because, of course, the other problem was that the publishing date, the date it went to the printers, was before the season started, which meant that a lot of the kits hadn't been announced. So yeah. I was on tenterhooks, and every 10 minutes, I'd be looking on various websites trying to see if the new away kit had come out, because I had to get that season's kits in the books. And if they weren't released, luckily a couple of clubs did give me a sneak preview. I won't say who they were, but a couple of them did send me CADs and said, these are the designs for next season, which was brilliant. You know, they were really helpful. But it meant that, it was quite a nerve-wracking period. So, but again, I made a decision with the publishers to only go back to 1980. Because that was really, I thought going back to the 70s is a nightmare when it comes to kit research. It's so random and illogical, really, in a way, that 1980 proved a nice starting point. Advertising sponsorship was really, really kicking in. So that made a good point. But Brazil, they certainly Crystal Palace. I think Swindon did, but of course they weren't in the books, but Swindon did as well.
Yeah, I think there's a few of them in there anyway, but it is... But those things like that are great. And the other thing is, I know that there's going to be a few that you've missed because there's so much work. And we're talking 10 years ago as well. So the extent to which you could research something 10 years ago, because you talk about, we'll check in websites to see if the new kits come out. Well, that would have been difficult enough, as it back then. But compared with how it is now, where you've probably seen it in well, we've seen a lot of the kits for next season already, and we're in sort of not even April yet. So it would have been incredibly difficult, but so you could be forgiven for anything any sort of small omissions. But the interesting thing for me is, are there any kits that crept in that just never existed?
Well, you know there is. there is. What's funny is that, going back to a more positive thing, you're right about the lack of material, because they really, I mean, one of the classic stories I often tell people, you go on eBay now and you search for a shirt, search for, I don't know, whoever it is, Liverpool home shirt, you'll get about, what, I don't know, 9, 10, 12 pages worth. In those days, I could put third shirt in eBay and I'd get 3 pages. Maybe 4, and that was all there was. And you had to really delve deep, and I put out messages on forums, you know, and got really rude responses from people, but it was incredibly difficult, and most of the research came either from my own archive that I'd kept, or spending hundreds of pounds on programs where you'd buy the program of the game after the one you were trying to find the kits in, and hope that you could see a little black and white picture that you could look at and say, I reckon that was yellow, you know, and work out what they wore. So I got very good at identifying colour tone through black and white images, which is a gift I've not yet figured out how to make money from. But that's the research was very, very different. If you did it now, because I mean, the publishers actually asked me to do an international version of True Colours. And I said at the time, I don't think I could do it justice. And if I couldn't do it justice, I didn't want to do it. I wanted it to be really good. But of course, now, a few years later, you probably could do an international True Colours with a network of people, shirt collectors. You could easily do it, you know. So anyway, going back to your question, kits aren't in there. The front cover of True Colours, something that horrified me, the Chelsea kit. They only wore that particular kit in pre-season friendlies because it was, I think, they had a new kit the season after, and it was the first time that Chelsea hadn't had a two-season home kit. And, of course, the new kit came completely out of the blue, caught me on the hop. So that particular design with Samsung as sponsor was only worn, I think, pre-season.
Yeah, so it was a centenary, I think, wasn't it? So that the reason?
That's right. And, of course, as, you know, shirt collector extraordinaire Simon Shaky Shakeshaft will always remind me, there's a Wales kit that never existed that I've got in the book as well, mainly because someone had told me that that was the away kit, and of course I had no proof and had to go with it, and it turned out to be complete nonsense. So that was a bit of an embarrassment, but I think with anything of that scope there's always going to be mistakes. It just, yeah, that's the nature of the beast.
You're doing it on such a scale that there's going to be omissions, and there's, and I'm over the moon that that those have crept in, but there's these make believe kits. But that doesn't count. I'm not letting you have the Chelsea one, because if they actually did wear that, and that must be worth a fortune if you could get hold of those.
Yeah, so they definitely wore it. But again, it's funny. I had to set myself all these little rules with the book, and one of the rules I set myself was it had to be worn in a competitive game. So pre-season friendlies, testimonial games, none of those kits counted. And even if they had the kit in the cupboard and never used it, that had to be counted as well. One of the difficulties I had was the Liverpool Hitachi all-yellow kit. I don't think they actually wore it with the Hitachi sponsorship. But in theory, they would have done, because Hitachi were the sponsors. They had the yellow kit in the cupboard. So if they needed to and the game wasn't televised, that's what they would have worn. So that's how I had to illustrate it. So there's all these kind of rules I had pinned up on a board, you know, that told me what I could do and what I couldn't do.
The attention to detail is fantastic. Like, there's a Blackburn kit from 1984 to 1988, and they change ever so slightly, but there's three different illustrations for them. So they've like added red cuffs to it. So it's probably the exact same
body
material. Yes, it's Spall. And they changed the Spall logo one season, and then the next season they've got a slightly different Spall logo. And then they changed the colour of the cuffs. But it's essentially the same shirt each season, but you've got a new illustration for each one. What was that like to do that? Is that soul destroying, or is that the best?
Funny enough, as long as you set yourself your rules that you obey by, you can do it. Because again, what I didn't want to do is, if the sponsor changed, I wouldn't draw that shirt again. I would put the sponsor in a little box and say, well, in the following year they wore it with this sponsor. And if the badge changed, and that's happened on a few of the shirts as well, where the badge changed, but nothing else did. I think my rule at the time was, if two major things changed, it warranted a new shirt, a new illustration. So with those Spall Perspex shirts, if you do look, I'm hoping there would be something major enough to change. Yeah, for example, on one of them, the Spall logo changed, and shadow pinstripes were added to the shorts. There you go. There's your two criteria. Yeah. So that was, again, really strict, and I had to look at it and think, is there enough going on here to warrant that change?
That's when the OCD kicks in, I suppose, and it's just keeping to that rule.
And you can become a little bit fanatical about it, because you end up poring over stuff and thinking, how do I do this? And things like chain shorts, chain socks. For some reason, I decided on illustrating chain shorts, but not chain socks. And I didn't want to overlay them, so they appeared in a little box further down. So, but again, the formula was really simple though, Jay. It was when it was worn, and then a bit of a context about the design and what was going on at the club, who wore it, and in what games, what big games. And that's what I try to do for everyone. But what a lot of kit projects do, and a lot of kit websites do, and I'm sure you've noticed this as well, is that they fall into the trap of talking about the football and the team. And it's not about that. It's about the shirts. So there's a wonderful little book that came out from Burnley when they had the collection of all their shirts. I don't know if you ever saw that a few years ago. And you read the write-ups, and I want to know why they stuck with Spall for most of the 80s. But it's not covered. All they talk about is what was going on at the club. And I'm thinking, I'm not interested. I want to know about the shirt. If this is a book about football shirts, write about the shirts, not the club.
Yeah.
So that was another strict thing I really try to do.
It is good the way you will actually do that as well. So you'll mention worn in this particular game, and that for a reader that's good to sort of jog their memory and say, oh yeah, I remember that one. I remember that match. I remember where I was, and that. So it does tie into that as well. But like you say, that you're not buying a kit book because you want to hear about the history of a football club. You want to hear about the history of the suppliers and why did Book to go? Why did Ribeiro come in and then go the next season, but the kit looked identical? It was probably because they went bust in both cases.
Well, so that's it. You have to make, what I found is that you have to make a lot of very educated guesses and join dots as to why things have happened. Because, as I'm sure you're aware, the kit world is quite a closed shop in many ways. And you know, going back 20 years, you try and find anybody that can explain to you the story of influence sportswear and QPR or you know, Birmingham, what happened there. It becomes quite difficult. So you have to make assumptions. And most of the time, fingers crossed, I got it right. But, you know, there are hiccups there. But I've had to try and use wording that said, you know, it suggests that this may have been the reason behind this. Because that's all you can do, but you have to try and explain it a little bit. So I never at any point deliberately put in any mistruths. It was always based on, you know, as much evidence as I could gather.
Yeah. And it's in the blue book where you cover the international teams, which is sort of the home countries and Ireland, or Republic of Ireland as they're known in football.
That was a big deal when the FA approved the book. I remember phoning the publishers and they kind of let slip that they weren't expecting the FA to approve it because the FA don't approve very much. And they were really delighted because they thought, right, this is really going to be a goer now. Because if the FA have backed it, then, you know, it's a good thing.
Yeah. The thing I noticed was that in around 2001, there's a thing with the Ireland shorts. So they have, like, the home kit comes out and it's got a pair of shorts that goes with it, but then later an away kit comes out and the away kit shorts better match the home kit.
Yeah.
So they start with the change away shorts with the home kit, and there's like little paradoxes there. So yeah, it's fascinating.
There's some really odd stuff like that. There is, and there's actually loads of little, I wouldn't say secret things, there's loads of little bits in there that if I tell you, you go, all right. Like, for example, all the photos that I've used to start each chapter, I chose those and licensed those. Because I'm a designer as well, I designed the books and actually typeset them. So all the artwork was mine as well. So the publishers didn't do anything other than pay for them to be printed and market them. I'm saying that's not all, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But if you look through those colour pictures, you mentioned earlier that they're all English teams. It might be interesting just to look and see how many of those players are Scottish and come back to me and tell me what you find.
Okay, well, you shouldn't tell us that. I might. That's interesting. Okay,
it's long enough.
That is something I noticed, because there is a person. There's definitely your personal preferences running all the way through. There will be a case of wonderful shirt and this is a beautiful example and all that. So even though it is factual, you do put your opinions across. And when you like a shirt, you'll tell us.
I do, but one thing I stress very much when I wrote, because when I got the approvals for all the logos and everything else, I did say it's not going to be a negative book. Because one thing I have a problem with, and this will resonate with you as well, is this worst shirts ever business. You know, it wasn't about that. It was about the about detailing everything, because, you know, it's so easy to just slag everything off with no merit behind it. And I thought, this is going to be a celebration of football kit design. So I was very clear to say there's going to be nothing derogatory. And I chose my words carefully. And Dennis Hurley often makes, you know, comment to this. I'd use the word challenging. It was a challenging design that split opinion. And that's kind of me saying, oh dear. But I was doing it in a positive way. That's what the book's about. It wasn't about a criticism. It was about a celebration.
Sometimes it goes beyond sort of praise, though. So for the Manchester United away shirt in 1980, which is the one with the stripes down the side. So this is like all Adidas shirts, or virtually every Adidas shirt, or high profile release of Adidas shirts at the minute, have these stripes down the sides. All the Euro 26, or most of the Euro 2016 shirts have got these stripes down the side. And that was like the main one that we'd noticed before then.
Maybe.
I'll save that, because there is another one that I'll bring up later. But and maybe even earlier than that, actually. But maybe around a similar sort of time. Anyway, so Manchester United had this shirt. It's a white shirt with black stripes down the side. Now, I was checking through your books earlier, and it says, on your description of this shirt, it says, schoolboys across the country switched allegiance on the strength of this innovative outfit. Is that actually true?
Well, I don't think I've ever met... I was very close to switching to Man United at that point, because I loved that shirt so much. And I was, what age was I? I was 10. So that was my memory of that shirt, because I remember seeing that and thinking, wow, that's something else. And I really wanted to buy it, but as I was a Liverpool fan, there's no way I could have bought it. But it was a definite test for me. It was like a... being tempted in the desert, you know, that's that kind of the temptation.
That's,
it was that
that's
kind
very
of thing.
Topical.
It is, isn't it? But yeah, so that was, I mean, that's just, it's funny you should pick up on that. There's, yeah, it's a little bit of my history in there as well, I guess.
Yeah, so you've taken your own opinion and extrapolated from that, really.
Yeah.
Okay, well, another thing was one of the Bolton shirts. Now, I wouldn't know this if I saw the shirt. I certainly wouldn't notice it if I saw the shirt from a black and white picture, for sure. But even if it was a colour picture, I don't think I'd know this. But there's a Bolton shirt from 1990. Now, this is the season where the kits were made by Match Winner, but they had Reebok as sponsor. Is that right?
Oh, lovely shirts, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, good shirts. And also a massive point of interest there to have like another, not at that point, but a company that will become a kit manufacturer as the sponsor on a football shirt when the kit's actually made by someone else. That's fantastic.
But definitely,
The away shirt from that season is a very, very tight blue and white, and it makes the shirt look sky blue. So that is what they should have done with this England shirt that's just been released, isn't it? You have royal blue or navy blue on the sleeves, and then that should make the sleeves at sky blue if you wanted them to look sky blue. But the inclusion of sky blue is ridiculous.
Of course, that's a brilliant point. I mean, that's exactly, yeah, that would have been a really good way around it, wouldn't it? They could have said, well, actually, we haven't deviated from the colours. It is royal navy or royal blue.
You mentioned other sort of ideas about kits. So the worst kits and all this kind of thing. Now, there are other football kit books. So one of them is Dave Moore's book, The Worst Football Kits of All Time. Now, I wonder about this, and I wonder about the list that you see on the internet. I think it's maybe that is the acceptable way of talking about football kits. So that has become how you open the door into talking about football kits, is you slag them off. When really, it's just an excuse to talk about kits that you want to talk about. Well, do you think there's any weight to that theory?
There is, when you have to kind of accept that's what happens, and you'll see the brown Coventry shirt will pop up, and you kind of think, oh, right, okay. And it is, I can't be elitist about it. That's what people are in, people like that. And it does, it's a great topic, isn't it, in the pub. What about that kit? Oh, yeah, what about that one? And that's how it is. And that's, if that gets them interested in what's good design and what's bad design, And of course, that's all down to opinion anyway, isn't it? But it's, yeah, that is what happens. And of course, Dave Moore is perfectly qualified to do that because of the work he does with historical kits. So he did what he needed to do. It was, you know, it was a light reading kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's a popular book, and it's... This is the parallel, I suppose, to the True Colours books, and it's like old media and new media, I suppose, in the historical... I mean, your website is fantastic as well. It fills in gaps, and it has interesting articles about football kits and that and all that kind of thing. There are galleries on there as well of certain seasons and certain teams, but it's fascinating. But in terms of a comprehensive base of designs on the internet, historical football kits is I suppose it has become the go-to place.
Yeah,
It's like an equivalent of yours, but I know the people who need to research football kits won't just use historical football kits. They will use the True Colours books as well, because there is a depth of knowledge in there as well that sometimes you won't get from looking on the internet. And not just the illustrations. I mean, the way you illustrate them is fantastic. Probably the best way of illustrating them. So if you're going to try and compete with something, it's probably going to be your designs. But also the writing as well is very important, and you're explaining why these... And it will help you if you're researching something and you see that you've written that the sponsor changed this season for this reason. And then if you're looking for a particular shirt for a particular game, then that will help. And it's very, very useful. So
no, I appreciate that. Thank you. I mean, I think with Dave's stuff, the work on there is fantastic. My interest really doesn't go much beyond, say, the 60s, though, when it comes to shirts. And, of course, the one thing that I did that he would never do, he said he can only do it on certain occasions, is include all the change kits. It just wasn't... he wanted just to focus on home shirts, you know.
What does the future hold there? So we've got these two books that are fantastic, but we're sort of... I didn't actually think of doing it, but we're sort of a 10th anniversary sort of stage, aren't we, since they were published?
Yeah,
so
well...
I'm not necessarily saying that there has to be a third book, but for a new generation of people who probably didn't get your books originally, is there an idea of what they could have instead of that? Or is there... what would be the equivalent now?
Do you know what? Believe it or not, I still get a lot of people ask me that, and I'm really, you know... The response to the books has been brilliant. And I still get people saying about new books, and it's brilliant to hear it. I mean, I did look very, very seriously into self-publishing a 10th anniversary edition, exactly that. And I wanted to go back to 1970, bring it right back up to date, include maybe double the amount of clubs, flinging the odd goalie shirt, tracksuits, stuff like that. And plans are really underway. But, you know, it's not dead in the water, but the problem has always been with this is getting those clearances, getting those permissions. Because to do it properly, you have to do that if you're making money from something like that.
Yeah, and of course. I think most of the clubs are probably under new ownership, like the Americans have come in with a whole new team of lawyers and stuff. So anything that was okay before, well, I don't know.
I was going to say, you talk about the American side, there was a couple of, I could write a book about the clearances I had to do for this, I think. A couple of times I had to stay up really late to speak to, like, West Coast America. And a couple of the sponsors, there's two sponsors, didn't give approval. One was Coors, who again were American owned, and said, look, we'd really love to let you use it. But he said, the amount of paperwork I'd have to complete, he said, I just can't do it. So that was that. And the other one was Redbus, and they said, we never wanted any association with Charlton again. and the irony of it was, that was the very first phone call, the first one I ever made, and they said no. And of course, at that point, I could have just chucked the whole project in the bin. I was that distraught. I mean, I actually shed a tear. I just thought, oh, no, this isn't going to happen. But in the end, everyone else did. So you just put a little note in and say, they refused permission, and just drop the logo off.
Yeah, it's a shame. So the book is incomplete now. It's worthless, in effect.
Yeah, that's right.
I suppose the way around it is certain books have take pictures. Like Rich from Football Attic has got kit books where he takes pictures of the shirts. And I think that's probably all right because you're not reproducing if you're doing it that way, are you?
Yeah, there's mixed feelings on that. I'd heard one thing, because obviously a similar book to that is the Magnificent Arsenal shirt book.
Yeah.
But that was very much the angle that was taken then, was that because there were photos of the shirt, but I still think there's issues involved, and the classic story is the Panini football sticker, Premier League football sticker story. You must know that one, where Panini got sued by the Premier League because they did an unofficial sticker album with Premier League players. And I believe the story goes that the Head and Shoulders shop included the Premier League logo on the sleeve patches, and that was enough for the Premier League to say, "Oi, hang on."
Dear.
You know, I think Panini claimed incidental use, I think is the phrase, but it's, you know, but I think that is the way kit books are going now. It's coming from shirt collectors and seeing the shirts in your hands and photographing them. And Rich's books are brilliant as well, absolutely brilliant. So, and like the Arsenal shirt book, and it's coming from people who are experts in the clubs in question. Because, of course, with True Colours, with all due respect to Bolton Wanderers, I didn't know much about their history. So I had to kind of immerse myself for each club in what their ups and downs were, and then try and pin that to a shirt and sort of figure out what was the correlation between them, or if there was any.
Yeah. I think there's some Italian... There's a lot of books now that... There's several Italian ones, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Books that focus on Italian football club shirts. So there's a Roma one and there's a Milan one, and there's a huge interest, I think, now in old football kits. And
yeah,
but the illustration, you are sort of the daddy in that, I think. Certainly when it comes to publishing books, there's not one that even comes close to yours. Actually, after all that, the first book is out of print, is it?
Yeah, the first book is out of print, so you can pick up copies, I think, on Amazon. I think they're on Amazon for a penny still. I think you can get them from there, which is, I think, is well worth it for a penny. But yeah. And there was a nice double box set as well, of both of them in a real heavy-duty slipcase, and I believe that's quite rare. I don't think there's many of them floating around. So
it's not what I've got. I haven't got that. I've got them separately. But the blue one you can still get from the original. Because I think they've got it in stock, I think. I think I checked it the other day. Yeah, well, so.
ANC Black are owned by Bloomsbury, so they have always been part of Bloomsbury Group, so they might still do it. Yeah, they might still have it on their website.
Yeah, you can get it from there. So, yeah. So both books still available, and my favourite books, and... Well, not their favourite books. I don't know. That's maybe. I probably refer to those books more than any other books that I've got, so yeah, they probably are, but that's, I'm not sure, as good as they are, I don't think that should be the height of my sort of literary knowledge.
Although it's very kind of you to, it's very kind of you to say it. I would be disappointed if they were your favourite books. I think there's must be other classic literature. They ain't, I know that much, but there you go.
Well, they are to me, John, they are to me.
Good, thank you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay, so other things that are going on in the kit world at the minute. Johan Cruyff died.
He
said he was 2-0 up on cancer.
Oh.
So, kind of tuned out of it, as you would do when a team goes 2-0 up in a match, and then you have that happen. So yeah, that was horrendous, but it does make you think back to his career, because he's a fantastic footballer, but also I suppose it sounds flippant, but he wore some fantastic kits, didn't he?
Yeah, and of course the Johan Cruyff Adidas Puma saga is one of the classic kick stories, isn't it, ever really. And I'm sure people will know it, but of course it's the 74 World Cup where he was sponsored personally by Puma, but Holland wore Adidas shirts and he customized the shirt because he didn't want to upset his sponsors and removed one of the three stripes, which is just both rebellious and kind of commercially aware at the same time, which is great, you know.
It's ahead of its time, and it's things we've talked about before where I wrote a thing about football kit Mavericks just the other day, and Maradona wore Napoli socks in the Italian 90 quarterfinal against Yugoslavia. So there's various things that like that have happened, but Johan Cruyff is a major one.
If I remember correctly, didn't John Toshack Swansea play Liverpool, I think the first home game after Bill Shankly died? And he wore a Liverpool shirt under his Swansea shirt. Is that not true? Have you heard that one?
Oh, okay. Well, that is something that should have been included in my blog article, but I didn't include it. So, yeah.
Have a Google of that.
Yeah, I'll definitely have a look at that. Yeah. So things like that. And Johan Cruyff was a prime example of that kind of thing, because he did his own thing, whether it was at the behest of Puma or not, I don't know. But it doesn't sound like something that he would be... have his arm twisted to do by like whoever made his boots. It was something that he would have done.
I think it came from loyalty, didn't it? I think he was just probably knew what side his bread was buttered, but I think it came from loyalty to his personal sponsor. But I just love stories like that, because you think, imagine if that happened today, what the uproar would be. It's like Vinnie Jones cutting off his when he was playing for Chelsea, and the long shorts were introduced by Umbro. He cut off about 3 inches off the bottom of his shorts. He preferred to wear them at the smaller size.
Well, Vinnie Jones did that, did he?
Yeah, I've never found a picture of it, but I distinctly remember seeing him on Match of the Day, and he just chopped the bottom of his shorts off and trimmed them right down.
Stuart Pearce did it.
Oh, did he?
Yeah,
Stuart Pearce. I didn't know that.
And there's pictures of Stuart Pearce doing it, yeah. Well, not him actually cutting them. That would be a great picture. Like a dressing room shot of him doing it. But just back on Cruyff again. I mean, great player, but we steered clear. When we did that 50 greatest football shirts ever, we steered clear of all the iconic shirts. But we do like them still, even though we don't necessarily think that they're design masterpieces, because it's probably through evolution that it's got there. It's the teams that he played for, and there's been some great players that have played for teams with shoddy kits, and he played for teams with brilliant kits. To play for Ajax, Barcelona. I think I'm pretty sure he would have worn a white Barcelona shirt at one stage as well. I think that when he was playing for Barcelona, they were still wearing white with... maybe with a sash in blue and red, maybe. But he certainly wore the yellow with a blue and red sash.
I was going to say the yellow one, yeah.
Yeah. And Feyenoord he played for as well. And Paris Saint-Germain. He played for played a couple of games for Paris Saint-Germain. Which
I was going to say, I didn't know that. Yeah. I didn't know he played for those.
But another iconic kit, Le Coq Sportif shirt he wore for them. So... yeah,
and of course, there's something about Cruyff and his style and his look that perfectly suited those 70s kits as well, didn't it? I mean, it's like Chris Waddle in the 80s. It was, you know, him in the 70s, you know, perfect style for it.
Yeah. He looked really cool, and if you put him in a good kit, then he looks even better. And he always wore good kits, so that was perfect.
And do you think as well, Jay, that was he one of the first players that really his shirt number became his brand as well, because he's so renowned for 14? Was he one of the first with that, do you think?
Yeah, well, it's not really a squad numbers thing, is it? He was injured for a while, I think, and when he got back into the team, someone had taken over. He was wearing number 9, I think, for Ajax. And when he got back into the team, he just said to the guy, "No, you carry on wearing 9, I'll wear 14." And then that became like a starting 1 to 11 number was like 14. So someone would have missed out and you would have had a 14 in the starting lineup from that point onwards with him. So yeah, it's like he's like proto squad numbers from Johan Cruyff, which is great as well. And it just shows the sort of character of the guy that just did his own thing, which was great. What I was alluded to earlier, he went to America later in his career, played in the NASL, and there's a picture of him, you can Google this, there's a picture of him with George Best, and George Best is playing for San Jose Earthquakes, I think. And they've got that stripes down the side thing, so I'm not sure what season it was.
But was he with New York Cosmos? Is that right?
He played for New York Cosmos. I think he may have played for LA something. LA Aztecs maybe as well.
Oh, that rings a bell.
I think he played for more than one team in America. If you want to look at good pictures of football kits and football players and just combine the whole thing, you've got George Best and Johan Cruyff in American football kits, and they were like ahead of the time back then, and not necessarily in a good way, but with all different numbers and names on the shirt and all that kind of thing, which is something that we ended up just doing anyway, whether people are for it or against it. So to have a picture of the two of them in those sorts of kits and thinking how great those two players were,
and it's interesting as well. And it just goes to show how eras of kits become so synonymous with the time, and you sling in a player from a previous decade, and it jars. And it's there was a great thing, I think, where England played Germany in the 80s, and they wore, I think England were wearing the current Umbro shirt, I think, and they used 66 World Cup team wearing the current Umbro kit. I'm sure it was that, and of course it looks so odd because you're seeing all these old men wearing current Umbro, and it's just fascinating seeing the different clashes of decades there, isn't it? Historical stuff.
But very, very strange. Okay, so yeah, so Johan Cruyff, incredibly sad. I'm just watching as we talk. I'm not paying attention to it, but I've got it on in the background. There's England against the Netherlands, and the Netherlands have got over the Nike swoosh. They've got a number 14 just above it as a tribute to Cruyff. Yeah.
Joe, that's fine. That's something that has come up in recent years that I've been pleased to see, because again it backs up my ideas of how powerful the football shirt is when things like that happen, when it can become a real symbol and commemorative thing, can't it? You know, when they retire a shirt number and they've had the players' names on the back and stuff like that. I think they're really the football shirt has become such a powerful symbol now, which is why it's got to be treated properly, I think.
Yes, which brings us on to the England kit that I'm looking at right now.
You're making that link, not me.
So a couple of things have happened since we talked about it last week. We said that we were for or against it. I've gone into sports shops since then, and I went into three sports shops. I went into JD Sports, DW Sports, which is what JJB is now, and what's the Sports Direct, the Mike Ashley one. And it's shocking. I mean, it's so bad. The stadium version of that England shirt is so basic.
Really? In what way?
All the things that we were talked about last week. So we talked about the weaves and all that. And none of that's included in the stadium shirt. So they say the sleeves are like knitted, and that's, you've got these threads of sky blue. No, you haven't. It's just a normal Nike basic shirt with a sublimated design. So to the extent that if you turn the sleeve inside out, you can barely see it. You see it showing through, the same as any sublimated print. Yeah, so that, really, really that, shocking.
That detail on the cuff, that hasn't come across in the stadium version.
No, they haven't bothered putting it on there. So if you can't pop the cuffs, you can pop the cuffs, but there's nothing there when you pop the cuffs.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. So all this marketing stuff about this is what the shirt is, that's the player's version, which you could buy, is £100. The England bit on the back of the neck, that's like a heat transfer, like basically applied heat transfer. The crest is like, there's completely soulless. Like, it's very, very intricate, but the same way as a computer is very complex. It's like, just make it the way Umbro made it in 2009, where it had depth. It was essentially three dimensional. It was nicely embroidered. I don't understand why they don't do that.
Has it got
on the replica version?
Did you see how the blue stripes down the side work? Do they kind of split open with flashes?
Yeah.
Is that how that...
So that bit is true, except you can sort of see it anyway. So if you look at it, you can see the red if you look closely. And then if you stretch it, then you don't need to look quite as closely. You can...
Okay.
The red is there. But it's not never going to be the case. The only way it would be the case, especially with that version of the shirt, which is cut that way, is if, say, you're playing football in it, someone pulls it. It's not going to be as you twist and turn as a footballer, which
or if you put on a couple of sizes too small, it might reveal itself as well. But,
you know. Well, maybe it will continually. Yeah, yeah.
Did they have the stadium shirt in the shop as well? Was it just the player spec shirt in?
No,
as
that's
well?
The other thing. No, I didn't see it. So you might be able to get it, and I'm sure you can get it in Nike Town in London, but I don't think it's certainly not obvious that it's not on a rack, that as far as I saw, it was just the stadium version of it. But I don't understand what the thinking behind that is. So there's a really cheaply made version that they're selling for £60.
Yeah.
But then there's a £100 one which has all this technology in it. You'd think that they would be pushing that one more because it's a better product. And that would be the reason why you would make the £60 one far inferior, because then people would look at it and go, well, I'm not paying £60 for that, I might as well pay £100 for the proper one. But I think, you can't get hold of the proper one. So I don't know what I think it is.
If the Daily Mail Brigade got hold of the 90-100 quid shirt being the standard one, they'd be uproar. I mean, they'd have a field day. So I think they have to keep those limits in place with costs. But it's a bit disappointing to hear that, though, because, I mean, I still feel potentially it's a good looking kit. I think it, as we said in detail last time, it raises all sorts of other questions. But it's a shame it's not been done justice on that replica version.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now, like they're playing in it, and the sleeves are so faint that it is basically a white shirt. You don't really see that it's got blue sleeves. The other thing is that, and I'll always go back to this, but the base layer thing. So they wear they wore the away kit against Germany, and Germany wore their away kit as well, but we won't get into that.
Oh, don't get me started on that.
They wore red base layers with it, so the base layers don't even match.
No.
The shirt. They're wearing white base layers today, which beyond not matching the sleeves is actually breaching the regulations on base layers, because they're meant to be the same colour as the sleeves, or it's meant to replicate what the shirt would look like in long sleeves, but no one's wearing it in long sleeves today. I just don't understand anything. We listened to all this talk about this is what the shirt's going to be. They're not even meant to be wearing base layers. Based on all the marketing, they shouldn't ever need to wear a base layer anymore. The new weave should deal with everything that they should need dealing with. So it doesn't make any sense to me. The socks as well. So the socks are red. Okay, so you've made a decision to make the socks red, but they've got these blue lines on the back, and that looks purple. So you're adding another, because you've got blue lines on the red, you've now got purple on the back of the England socks. So that looks weird. I don't understand any of that. It's a load of ideas, and somehow it's come to fruition. And
it is a very puzzling. As I said before, it raises so many questions. It's a very puzzling kit. In a way, but you know, in some respects, maybe that is in the long term, maybe that's a good thing, because I mean, maybe it will change stuff for the better, maybe it change it for the worse. But it certainly annoyed a lot of people. There's very few positive comments about the kit, and it's interesting that they've actually had that. You know, given the green light. Really, when you look at that, isn't it?
But yeah, I don't know. I'd really love to like it, but I don't know what I'm liking, because I sometimes wonder that someone's watching me, like a Truman Show thing, and they're testing me to say, is he going to say he likes this? Because then we can just laugh at him, because it's a massive conspiracy, and it's all just to ridicule people who actually say that it's a good kit because it's, I don't know. Thing about the FA, so you say that the FA have allowed it to happen. Mm. And I saw something the other day. If you go onto the Nike website and look for Brazil shorts, there are two pairs of shorts. There's a yellow pair of shorts that perfectly fit with the new home shirt. So they're okay. Yellow shorts with a green stripe down the side. Now, this is a joke thing that people did before the last World Cup where everyone was going for the one colour kits and everyone laughed and said, well, Brazil clearly aren't going to do that. So someone put it on Design Football, like a version of it with a yellow shirt and yellow shorts and yellow socks as well, I think. So we said, oh, yeah, that will never happen. Now, I'm pretty sure that Nike wanted to do that and it's been vetoed by the CBF or whatever the Brazilian FA is, because these shorts on the Nike website, these yellow shorts go perfectly with the home shirt. There's also a pair of blue shorts on there, which I think they call them home/away shorts or something. Right. Now, they're the ones that Brazil launched the kit with, but they don't seem to go with the home shirt at all, but they combine them with that, which is the standard look, yellow shirt, blue shorts and white socks. But these blue shorts do look like they go perfectly with the away shirt. And the away shirt is blue. And you'd expect the new thing to be the shirt and the shorts to be the same colour, which is what Nike are doing with all the teams at the minute. So they look, the blue shorts look like the away shorts. The yellow shorts look like they should be the home shorts if it wasn't Brazil. But knowing what colours Brazil wear, then I don't know. It seems like someone's put their foot down and gone, no, we're not going to wear yellow shorts. We're Brazil. We wear blue shorts because otherwise the kit doesn't seem to fit.
But it's interesting you should say that, because really it's showing the perversity of the kit designers by playing with these colours in a way. But you know, sometimes, Jay, I wonder if we're overanalyzing too much as well. I wonder if all these things really did go on all the time, but only now, because every detail of a design is pulled apart by people like us. I wonder if we are maybe looking in too much. But clearly it means a lot to a lot of supporters, doesn't it?
Well, somebody's got to.
That's true. It might as well be us.
Yeah. People should be doing it. So we're doing the job that maybe isn't being done elsewhere. I don't know if it sells. And maybe it's just... maybe it's to get the brand talked about. Maybe they don't care about kit sales. So
possibly.
Maybe they care about column inches and the Daily Mail saying how the England kit is terrible. They write Nike 15 times in an article, and that's a great thing, and that means loads of people will go out and buy other Nike products, so they don't even need the football kits to sell. I don't know what the strategy is, but...
that's interesting, yeah.
There obviously have to be focus groups, but it's the same with it when Warrior released the Liverpool kits.
Oh, yeah.
You just think, who did you speak to? Who said that would be okay? If you went down that road, it would be okay.
Same thing with England one. What you know, how do these things, how do you get past the FA and convince them that this is the way forward?
From what Jason Lee said when I spoke to him on this podcast, once you paid your money, you do what you like. And that's...
really?
Yeah, I think there might be some sort of... I don't know. When you're paying as much as Nike are paying for the FA contract, I think maybe the FA would be scared to actually say, could you not do that, or we'll not make any of your kits in future if you don't want us to. no, we want you to make the kits. Oh,
I think clearly Nike will have complete belief in what they're doing, and I'm sure there's a very, very strong argument. I'll try and find out what that is, but they must have complete belief in this, so it will be interesting to see. And again, when we see the tournament in the summer, that's when we'll see it pan out, and we'll work out how good or bad they really are, I guess.
Evolution's not a terrible thing.
Not at all, no.
But I don't... if there's not a rhyme or reason to it, it doesn't make sense to me.
You know, to lead back a little bit to my True Colours books, if you look at the evolution of the England kit, especially in the 90s under Umbro, there's some designs didn't work as well as others, but there was a real evolution. You could see the common themes, the tradition, the heritage was there, but they still did some really good things with it. And I look back, I was doing some work for a client the other day on the England kits, and I thought, look at that, there were some real crackers there that I'd kind of underestimated at the time. But you realise how clever they were. And I just think sometimes with modern kit design, they're not quite getting that, is zeitgeist the right word? You know, they're not getting that kind of vibe. They're maybe wrapped up too much in themselves. I don't know. I don't know, Jay.
I don't know how relevant I am. So maybe this is the zeitgeist and I'm just completely unaware of it. But that wouldn't be a ridiculous notion. But I don't know.
Interesting.
I don't... There's been so many articles about it, and more than I... There's always a backlash whenever a kit's released. There's something wrong with it. So there was some of them were stupid, like the first Nike kit looked like a Germany kit. No, it didn't.
It
didn't look like a Germany kit at all. It was just looked like an England kit and a style of England kit we hadn't seen before. But
and it was a good kit. I thought it was fine.
It was all right, but there'll be a backlash. But this one seems bigger than usual, and you can see the reasoning and. When the product is dodgy, that's where you have a problem. When you don't see the effort, as the same level of effort has gone into the product that you're selling to people, that's a shame. That's the England kits done then. I don't want to talk about them anymore. I think
no, let's leave it.
No, we'll try and avoid talking about them. I do want to talk about base layers again, and I'm just going to list this very quickly. The France kit is the one with the alternate sleeves. A player wore a long... Antoine Griezmann wore a long sleeve shirt, so he had alternate sleeves. I don't think there was a single France player that wore base layers, because there isn't a base layer of alternate sleeves, it looks like. So I don't understand what's going on there. England don't have alternate sleeves, and plenty of players wear base layers. That just seems ridiculous to me. Why certain... Mm. People with a certain kit could wear base layers and other teams with another sort of kit can't wear a base layer because they've done this alternate sleeve thing, but they haven't provided alternate sleeve base layers. That seems the only reason to me.
Mm.
I don't know. It's just so depressing because I was so looking forward to it and it hasn't happened. And
never
just,
mind.
I feel all round like I'm being shortchanged. I'm being shortchanged by the industry.
Mm. Just seeing it shows... As we're talking, the England-Netherlands game's just finished, so it's a defeat for the shirt on its first outing.
Yes, it is, in more ways than one.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that has been fun talking about your books. Sort of interested to talk about Johan Cruyff and depressed talking about the England kit.
Well, thanks for letting me come on.
I'm more depressed about the England kit than Johan Cruyff dying. That's terrible, isn't it?
That is bad. You've got to look at yourself there. No, thanks for letting me come in. It's I always like sort of telling the story of the books, and it's thanks for giving me the opportunity to sort of talk a bit about it.
No, pleasure, and thank you for coming on. A couple of things to talk about. Dennis Hurley's written a fantastic article about templates, and particularly the Adidas templates in the 1994 World Cup, USA 94. So that's a really fascinating read. You can read that at museumofjerseys.com. So
that's the evolution of the Adidas equipment templates, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's the second phase of those ones where they came up from the hips, let's say.
The
Adidas stripes came up from... all the kits that had that design in the 94 World Cup.
That'd be worth a read, I think.
Yeah, he sums up the idea of templates very well as well. He's a knowledgeable man.
He is, very much so.
Okay, it's interesting. I'll give you a sneak preview. Romania in that World Cup wore a red away kit, and they had stripes on the shirt and shorts, which were, I think they had two. The outer two were yellow, and then the middle one was blue. But then the socks, the hoops on the socks were the other way around. So it had like two blue hoops and a yellow hoop. So we always thought, oh yeah, they messed up the socks for that. It turns out now that the replica versions of that Romania kit had it the other way around as well. They had, I think it's two on the shirt and shorts, they had it the other way around. So the same as the socks that they wore in the tournament. So where do these things come from? How does that happen? Where is the mistake? We'll never know. But
and it's like, how serious is the mistake? And the answer is not really, but it's still interesting that it happened.
It's terrible though, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
Isn't it, aren't you, doesn't it pain you that something as awful as that has happened, such a big decision, and they've got it wrong? I don't know.
It is. I mean, I think it's, yes, it does, Jay. It's nearly 10 o'clock, so I'm just going to say yes, it is.
okay. Yeah. All right. Well, that's been great. Designfootball.com on Facebook, as usual. Designfootball on Twitter, if you want to message us or follow us or whatever. I'm J29ers. John is True Colours Kits on Twitter. TrueColoursFootballKits.com. That's the website. Fantastic stuff there.
Drop us a line if you ever want to. If anyone wants to ever want to talk kits or ask me anything, I'm always happy to do it. So it'd be great.
Yeah, I'll be doing that very soon, John. I'm just going to continue this all through the night. You think you were saved when the podcast ended, but no, I'm just going to tweet you all night.
Thank you, Jay.
Okay, well, thanks very much, John, and I'll speak to you again soon.
Brilliant. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.